Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Trish Halpin.
And I'm Lorraine Candy.
Welcome to Postcards from Midlife, the show where we help you through the midlife, the menopause, motherhood, and everything in between.
Welcome to this special episode of Postcards from Midlife. Why is it special, you may well ask? Well, there are two reasons. Firstly, it's the last episode in this series, our first ever series of Postcards from Midlife. And secondly, Trish and I are sitting in a car recording. We're not allowed into the recording studio because of the coronavirus. So that's why Trish and I are sat in a car, in a car park in the middle of London, looking across some green fields.
We're very
actually.
Isolated. We're very isolated, but we're isolated together, aren't we?
Yes, we're not going near anybody else.
We're a good distance apart and we do have masks.
We're actually in the car park at the Serpentine, aren't we?
The show must go on, Trish. The show must go on.
Now, we actually recorded our guest interview before the corona developments. So later on in the episode, you'll be hearing our chat with psychologist and mental health expert Susie Godson, who you may remember from episode one. She is the sex and relationships columnist for The Times, and she is also the founder of an app that supports teenage mental health. We wanted to find out in particular how social media is impacting young people and how concerned we should be as parents about it. Right, so we're going to be stuck at home.
Well, not us together, obviously. No. That would be much more fun.
This is our last little meeting. But we are going to be stuck at home and watching an awful lot of TV, I think, and listening to a lot of podcasts. So I'd like a bit of inspiration, some ideas. So I want to hear, Lorraine, what are you watching and listening to that I might like?
We've gone retro.
Oh, yeah.
Back in time. 30 Rock.
Oh, I love that.
We've got an eight-year-old, you see, so we've got to keep it in the zone that she can watch. That's very, very funny. Mm-hmm. I've fallen in love with Alec Baldwin. It's actually quite good fun on Instagram as well. A bit of Seinfeld, Parks and Rec.
So it's kind of time to do all those shows. I never did The West Wing. I wish I'd done The West Wing. So maybe now's the time to do that.
Can't do that with an eight-year-old.
Oh, right. Okay.
Do you know what I like from The West Wing?
You can watch things on your own. You don't have to be with the eight-year-old all the time.
It's my favourite work phrase.
What's that?
Walk with me.
Oh, yeah. You've adopted that, have you?
I say that at work. Walk with me.
Oh.
And then I don't have to have a meeting and they disappear and pretend I'm going to the toilet.
Good,
and then
isn't it? Leave. Efficient, multitasking. I've got something that you definitely can't watch with the kids, which I don't know whether you've seen it yet. It's on Sky.
Debbie Does Dallas.
Pretty much. It's called Mrs. Fletcher and it's absolutely brilliant. It's a kind of comedy show about this woman who's in her midlife. It's American. Her son is just leaving home to go to university and he's a real jock and he's just pretty hideous and the way he treats his girlfriends and stuff. Anyway, Mrs. Fletcher, she's a single mum and she suddenly, when the son goes, she discovers porn.
Oh, my Lord.
So she's watching porn.
Is she living your second life?
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's what I'm aiming for. But it's just, it's so brilliant. And so it's definitely one to watch.
Netflix.
I think on your own. It's on Sky. It's on Sky. So I highly recommend that, Mrs. Fletcher.
And mid-April, Afterlife, Ricky Gervais is coming back.
Afterlife?
I loved it, the first one. Absolutely loved it.
That's not the John Sim thing. Oh, no, I'm thinking about Life on Mars.
What's happened to you today?
I don't know. Can't think straight.
Ricky Gervais, when his partner dies.
Oh, yes.
Come on, Trish.
Oh, no, you're right. That was
very
good.
It's lovely.
Yeah.
The other thing that is rumbling on and could be watched on catch up, not with small children, but with teenagers, is Five Guys a Week.
Oh, no. What's that?
It's a bit like Love is Blind.
Is it real life? Is it reality TV?
You don't like this, do you? No. This is the kind of television for which you have a WhatsApp group, which is perfect for these times. So that's what we'll be doing, listening to lots of ABBA.
I'm going to read Marion Keyes' Grown Up. I've heard such great things about that.
Hysterical.
That's going to make me laugh. I need a bit of laughter.
You do need that.
Yeah.
There's a cookbook, Jessie and Lenny Ware, Table Manners.
From the podcast, another good podcast to listen to.
You might
if
like
you haven't
that
already.
As well.
Yeah.
There's a new book about sleep coming out, mm-hmm. Why We Can't Sleep. By Ada Callahan. That might be quite useful.
Say that again. Ada Calhoun.
We're trapped in a car, Trish. that's what we'll be doing. It'd be great on Instagram if you could tell us what you're doing as well, and then we can share all the things. I'm going to be homeschooling the children and trying to work from home and separating the duties. So Mr. Candy's going to oversee math, science and things like that that he likes. And I will be art teacher. I have an outfit for this. And also PE teacher. Got an outfit for that as well.
I think I'm going to be doing food, food and yoga. Oh, I'm rubbish at teaching stuff at school, I think. I'm going to be doing food and yoga. Yes. And Neil's going to be stripping down a motorbike with our kids.
In the kitchen.
To teach them how to do... like motorbike stuff.
Who'll do their sex education? Oh, will that be you?
Or maybe they could get that on the TV.
Yeah, good.
Excellent.
Okie dokie.
And now it's time to hear our interview with Susie Godson. Susie, welcome back onto Postcards from Midlife. You're back today to talk about a wonderful initiative that you launched. It's an app that helps children and young people from the ages of 11 to 23 to deal with teenage anxiety and mental health. And it has a very interesting social media application, which is fascinating. So welcome to Postcards from Midlife, Susie. Shall we start with you, first of all, telling us about the app? It's called MeToo, but it's spelled M-E-E-T-W-O. Why is it called that? And also, how does it work?
So it's called MeToo because it's a peer support app. So the idea is that young people share their experiences or the things they're worried about, and other kids can click a MeToo button to say, yeah, me too. And it was called M-E-T-O-O. This is way before Rose McGowan and the MeToo movement. But when we registered with the app store, it turned out to be an Italian gay porn site, and we didn't think was going to be very good when young people were downloading it.
So unfortunate.
so we changed it. And we've obviously considered changing the name since the whole Me Too movement. But actually, in a weird way, it just resonates.
It resonates.
We started with 13 to 19-year-olds, and we've now moved down to 11-year-olds and up to 23-year-olds. We moved down to 11-year-olds because we're an NHS app and they wanted us to cover the whole of the secondary school period. And then we found that a lot of university students were using us. And obviously there's, as you know, massive mental health issues going on in university students. And so we extended it up to 23.
So I come onto the app. I'm in a troubled time. I'm 16. I'm a 16-year-old girl. What do I get? What's there for me?
It looks and feels like social media. So it looks like Twitter, really. And you post your problem or ask your question and you get a little kind of animation that says, thanks for posting. And then other young people reply to you and give you advice. And it's as simple as that. What we have done is create a space where kids who feel like they are the only person who has this problem, we can connect them. So, for example, we've got quite a big autistic community. Those kids feel very isolated because they may have a family group and a small social group, but they don't know other people who are like them. The secret.
But you've had some quite serious things happen on the app.
The every single post and reply is moderated. So we have a team of 10 trained, paid moderators who check everything before it goes live. So it's safe. We know it's safe. The app is also completely anonymous, so that young people can talk about the stuff that they really don't feel able to talk about. And there's so much shame and stigma around mental health. It drives me crazy when people talk about how, you know, there's an epidemic of young girls self-harming and it's all attention-seeking, and because that's so not what we see. I mean, there's so much pain and distress and stigma, and they don't want to upset their parents. They can't access professional help. The waiting lists for CAMHS are unbelievable. And unless you're suicidal, you won't get seen quickly. So there is this huge cohort. And we also know that the people who present at hospital with self-harm are only the tip of the iceberg.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's very easy for us as parents to demonise social media. But here's obviously an incredibly good example of how it does work. You know, we sort of tend to think that social media is a huge cause of anxiety in young people. Is that what you're discovering?
Absolutely not. In fact, at one point I was doing a talk and I went back through 3,500 posts and I found 12 mentions of social media, and they were literally in the context of the post. They were nothing to do with that being the cause of the problem. What we see is old-fashioned, real-world problems, problems with family, problems with exam stress, problems with friendship. If there is bullying, it tends to be in the playground. It's not cyberbullying. The young people are going through this massive period of change, developmentally, emotionally, physically. It's always been an incredibly difficult period. And that's what we're seeing. We see the same things that I went through as a teenager that you probably went through as a teenager. But when you create a community of 18, 20,000 people, suddenly they're one of hundreds and they can connect and talk about the things that are worrying them with a community of young people that understand them in a way that experientially none of us can.
I think a lot of what happens, or a lot of the criticism around social media, Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, young people aren't so much on Facebook, is that it makes them compare themselves to other people or to people who are seemingly leading a nicer, better, more glamorous, happier life. It's not always true. And that's the thing that most mums in the playground talk to me about. I've stopped them looking at social media because I just don't want them to see all of that. I think that's very damaging. I think children feel incredibly left out. Teenagers feel incredibly left out if you remove what is actually sometimes, as you say, a brilliant support network from them. It's not the platform, it's how they use it, isn't it? So do you find that the comparison thing is quite big?
I think, you know, objectively, that's not healthy for young people, particularly for young girls. And I do think it causes dissatisfaction. I think that young people spend too long on social media. There's actually no...
So that's the how you use it thing again, isn't it?
So there's actually no evidence that social media causes mental health problems. And it's really important to make that clear.
I make that clear in the column, in my Sunday Times Magazine column a lot. And people disagree with me relentlessly, despite being presented with all of the facts and the surveys. It is not proven as a link.
However, there is evidence that kids who spend 4 or 5 hours a day on something like Facebook... they are more likely to be depressed. However, it's chicken and egg. Are they spending all that time on Facebook? And who lets their kids spend 5 hours on Facebook?
Quite a lot of people do, actually.
I find the problem is that my kids are just on their phones for everything. They watch TV on the phone, they research stuff for school on the phone, and it's difficult to know what they're actually doing. And obviously when you sit down and talk to them, I'm often really pleasantly surprised. You know, my daughter is like, she follows Greta Thunberg and she's doing looking at The Guardian for alerts, and my son's doing like nice little art collages. And you just jump to the conclusion that they're doing something dreadful on, you know, Snapchat or something.
Exactly. And I think we're all like that. You know, it's your newspaper, it's your camera, it's your telephone, it's your email.
It's fear of change as well.
Yeah, but it's all going through one device, which historically it never did before. Whereas if you saw your kid going to pick up their camera and go and take some photographs, you think, oh, they're being so creative. But because it's through a phone, you don't see that. You know, let's not be naive. We have a generation of kids who are, you know, guinea pigs. Nobody has ever grown up
parents,
with this. We are guinea pig parents and they're guinea pigs, digital guinea pigs. But I think we have to give them the benefit of the doubt. You know, there is an extraordinary kind of rush of creativity coming out from young people. People like Greta Thunberg wouldn't have had a voice without social media. The power that it has to disseminate information, to educate, to entertain, all of these things are hugely positive. And there's a lot of research that shows that being part of a community online increases self-confidence and makes people, you know, more socially adept.
Do you think it makes them slightly more narcissistic, though, if that's the right word, that they are just become slightly obsessed with what they're doing all day? I see my eldest daughter's sending pictures of her forehead to her friend with things written. I think, what's she doing now? For God's sake, no one wants to see your forehead.
Yeah, I mean, but young people have always experimented with identity. You know, God, when I think back to my whole weekend was shopping for clothes and experimenting with makeup and all of the things that our kids are doing, but they're doing that experimentation online. We have a lot of young interns, you know, aged 15 or 16, working in the office because we have an open door policy because they know social media in ways that I will never be able to understand it. And they were laughing at me because I had thousands of pictures on my Instagram. They were like, oh, my God, no, I never have more than four. It's just, you know, the rules are
it's a different language.
You're experimenting with your identity, with how you're portraying yourself, and that is a really serious edit.
There's a point probably, I think, when they're around 13 or 14, when they're really kind of getting into it. And that's the danger zone, I think, of when, you know, I know, you know, friends whose daughters are starting to post sexy pictures of themselves. I mean, that's that kind of worry. What advice would you give to the parent of a child who was doing
we
that?
We went on holiday and my daughter, who's 14, put a picture of herself. She was wearing a bikini, but for all intents and purposes, it looked like she was in her underwear. And I was like, what is that? And I got sent it by a friend. He said, I think you better have a word with her.
Oh, well, we've all been sent the pictures and by it, friends know, who are allowed to follow them on Instagram, and I'm not allowed to.
Oh, no, I'm not allowed to follow her, obviously. But obviously it was taken straight down. And they are learning. That's a learning curve. Obviously there are kids whose parents aren't that involved in their lives, and they are probably on a different trajectory. But, you know, the interactions that we have with our kids around social media and how you present yourself and your digital legacy, they're all very important for both the parent and the child in how you navigate your relationship with each other. And
but we are the first generation who there are no rules. So it's difficult for it's been difficult for us, I think, for the last maybe 8 years, I guess it's been coming through to set the kind of I, for example, till they were 15, had no phones after 9 o'clock. Curfew, hid the phones. We have a no phones at the table curfew if we're eating, and no phones if we're all watching something on telly together. Now, when I did the 9 o'clock, they went berserk, the girls. Berserk. They tried to break that rule any which way they could. They would hide it down their pyjama front. They would, everything. They were taking these phones to bed, and it was the phones in bed that I was really, there was just no rules. Are there any rules now that you think we could?
We're all making it up,
you know,
as we go along. But I think with common sense, we're able to work it out. I have, my oldest daughter is 28, and she was right at the beginning of Facebook and MySpace. And she, you know, she was 16 and had a party, and she had one of those parties that ended up in the newspaper where, our house got trashed. The house next door got trashed. There was criminal damage. There was police.
Oh, is this where everyone turns up because it's on social media?
En masse. Yeah. So we learnt a lot in that period, and her younger sisters then were never allowed to have a party. Mm-hmm. And it's the same with this. We're all learning on the job. But instinctively, we know what is enough, you know, and what is too much. And we can work that out. But it's forcing us to talk to our kids about difficult issues. So issues like sex and relationships, like sexting, we are actually forced to have those conversations. And to be honest, so many parents negate their responsibility in that department. So I also think that that's a plus.
I think it's very difficult for them to work out what's real and what's not real sometimes in that. But I think having a phone and having access to that world in your bedroom during the night is the thing that frightened me the most. That was the thing that
so
made
within
me
our,
most worried.
Within our app, we shut down moderation at 11 o'clock and we put up a goodnight message, and they all know that once they can carry on posting or replying to people, but nothing will go live until 7:30 in the morning. And that is because we don't want young people posting overnight. However, because there is such huge waiting list for the child and adolescent mental health services, and because there's so little support, and the CAM services are giving Me Too to the kids on the waiting list, we have now got this very big clinical population. And so we're thinking we can't leave them overnight.
No, that might be their most needed time.
And so what we are hoping to do is team up with an Australian university. And then they could do the night shift and we would do the day shift. And I think there would be quite an interesting dynamic between kids who are miserable in the middle of the night in the UK and kids who are in the bright sunshine in the daytime in Australia. And that might actually be quite a helpful connection.
Now, Susie, there's a book as well, a Me Too book, which I believe has just won an award.
Yep, congratulations. It's just won the British Medical Association Health and Social Care Book of the Year Award. Mm-hmm. Which is pretty exciting. Basically, when we were building the app, we realised that, and we still feel this is true, there's so much media hype about teenage mental health and social media, and nobody ever talks to the children themselves. And because we had such an amazing community, we got some of them to write their stories. And then at the same time, We were aware that there's masses of resources out there, but nobody's ever thought to put them in one place.
Tied it together, yeah.
So we decided to create this directory. And while it would be great to have that on a website, actually the serendipitous nature of a book means that when a kid is sitting outside class because they've been naughty, a teacher can come and hand them this and they can suddenly see, oh, my God, there's all this support available. And then we also interviewed all the top experts in adolescent mental health in the UK. And so there's interviews with them as well and put them together mm-hmm. in a book. And it's been massively successful. I have to say that if I mention the app in my house, I just get shouted at because they're all so sick of it.
I think you do have to think, though, about communication skills and the fact that they are doing a lot of their communicating via a screen. So I think if you can kind of get a balance of making sure that they are really great at socialising with when there are people in the house, when you've got your friends around, that they're, you know, because my concern would be about if all you're doing is communicating to your friends or whatever, that's a very different way. You're not seeing physical sort of cues, body language, all of that
sort of stuff. Yeah, sometimes you'll see them, I'll have about 20 teenagers in the lounge and they'll all, it'll be completely silent in there and I think, what earth are they doing? And they'll all just be on their phones next to each other.
However, I first of all, I think there are individual differences between young people and some young people are fantastic at socialising and they're really outgoing and they will, you know, charm granny and the aunties, and there are others who are truculent and silent.
Well,
and,
for whom it's hell, you know. Kind of
yeah, exactly. So I just generally don't think you can have a kind of one size fits all approach to teenage behaviour. And you know, you get what you're given when it comes to kids. And ultimately,
can you take them back then?
They all, you know, most of them turn out okay in the end. You know, the teenage years are not known for you know, being a great time to get, you know, kids to be communicative in that respect. So
from your point of view, for mums and dads listening to Postcards from Midlife, it isn't a bad thing. You do not have to ban it from the house or police it in an extraordinary way. You just have to talk to your children about it and your teenagers about it.
I mean, I think you could stop at talk to your children, because I think a lot of us are very guilty of being on our phones ourselves.
Yes.
And, you know, there's evidence that children's speech patterns are being delayed in the early years
because
they're not being communicated with properly. So it's, I mean, I feel that social media has been an easy target. It's new on the block. But if I look at what's really going on in the app, and we have the most incredible data on what young people are worrying about, they're much more concerned about, you know, their parents fighting or possibly divorcing or issues around that, worrying about their parents. And, you know, instead of worrying about social media, it's important to look in the mirror
and
think,
sometimes
how
we deflect it, don't we? We distract it. And often you're just looking for something to blame when you feel out of control or a total failure.
Yeah. Now, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm constantly telling my daughter to get off her phone. But I think we have to maintain some perspective over it. The fact that it's new and different and we don't understand it doesn't mean it's bad. They said that about newspapers.
Television.
They said that about TV, about radio,
about
new
rock
technology.
And roll music.
Freaks everybody out. But I think, you know, the human race has survived worse than TikTok.
I'm quite good on TikTok.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, those were wonderful words of wisdom from Susie Godson. Now, this may be our last episode of this series, but we are going to be back for another series in a few weeks' time. Hurrah! So we've been looking through some of your lovely comments, some of your letters, some of your emails, Instagram, and actually your really lovely reviews, which have been really heartwarming, actually, because we did this podcast to get information out there so that women in this stage of life who were worried about anything would have somewhere to turn and experts to listen to. This one, really, I really like this one, mm-hmm. Trish.
Yep.
I love this podcast. I'm 43 with two adolescent boys. Oh, imagine
we
that.
We know that, yeah.
Hard work. Listening to you and your guests is both funny and enlightening. I'm so glad this conversation is now being had, giving women like me a heads up, giving us the information that has otherwise been severely lacking, and most importantly, empowering us at a time when we feel like we're losing control. I'm not on the decline. Lorraine, Trish and your guests, you have made me feel like this is the next episode.
Oh, I like that. But we've been getting quite a few from women telling us that their GPs are refusing to give them HRT, which is just really shocking and
yes.
awful, isn't it?
It's also something that came up in the recent Mumsnet survey, where one in four women had been to the GP at least three times to get the correct menopause diagnosis and medication. And a lot of them, a vast proportion of them, were given antidepressants instead of HRT, which would have been much more useful. So we asked one of our former guests, Dr. Shazadi Harper, who talked about HRT and gave you all of the symptoms of the perimenopause. And her advice is be as persistent as you can. If you are not getting the right treatment, if your GP is refusing to give you HRT, then you must be very, very firm and write a letter to the surgery and complain about this. There is a list of symptoms on various websites that are officially recognised that you can take in to your doctor as well. Also, concerning us now is the impact the coronavirus is going to have on us, particularly women who may run out of HRT. There are shortages at the moment as well.
Mm-hmm. So I think for general well-being while we're staying at home, Dr. Shazadi says, keep hydrated. Water is free. You don't have to go to the supermarket to get it. And look after your gut, which I thought was really interesting. So we really need to eat a varied diet with fruit and veg. And she advises taking a probiotic, if we can get one, to just boost our immunity and our mood, because I think we're all going to be a bit up and down, aren't
yes.
we?
Yes. I mean, the gut's responsible for 90% of our happy neurotransmitters, she says. So it produces serotonin, helps produce serotonin, which is responsible for 70% of our immunity. So it would be wise to take care of that. We also asked the question that a lot of people have asked actually on our Instagram is, how can I get HRT if I can't go to the doctor? Now, don't panic, because some surgeries are having remote consultations. You can ring and ask for a repeat prescription. You may not get as many months worth as you would have got with an actual doctor's appointment, but be persistent, because I know for some women the break in HRT will be monumentally awful actually, and there'll be many symptoms associated with it.
And if you're perimenopausal and you're not on HRT and you're thinking, oh God, I really need to do something about it, she suggests a supplement like Promensal or Menopace, red clover or black cohosh. She seems to think that sage helps with hot flushes and magnesium can help with anxiety. So it's worth considering those as well. And trying to do some yoga and Pilates with a YouTube class.
Yes, there is also Dr. Louise Newson's website, which is full of really, really helpful advice if you think you're perimenopausal, you have the symptoms and clearly you can't go to the doctor at the moment. Online, there's quite a lot of information, but stick to the authoritative ones, the British Menopause Society, and Make Menopause Matter.
And Dr. Harper is going to be doing a live Instagram Q&A every week from now on. So she's putting a lot of things in place to try and help all of us women out there at this time of our life.
And if you follow Postcards from Midlife on Instagram, we will start putting as much information as we can up as well, should you be in any situations where you need help. So we'll put contacts and books and websites and live Instagrams up there for you to follow.
I wanted to just read out a lovely, lovely email that was after our doggy episode. And we talked about our lovely dogs. We got a lovely...
Dogs save the family.
Somebody describes their increasingly bonkers dog, Rufus, who is a 10-year-old cocker.
Oh, I love this one. Yes.
Who needs a bit of medication nowadays. And they have to give it to him in his food. Yeah. But he's kind of a bit wise to their ways, and often sit next to his dog bowl and stare at it,
She says, I've no idea how he discovered this trigger, but when all else fails, my husband calls a special Rufus ringtone on his phone and has a, inverted commas, chat with the caller. And he says, oh, yes, Rufus. No, I'm sorry. He's not eating his breakfast. Yes. Yes, I'll tell him what you said. And then when the call ends, the dog eats. Rufus eats his breakfast.
They do understand us.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Now we've come to the part in the show where we always do something that's changed our life, something that we're trying, and a bit of nostalgia noodling. So, Lorraine, fire away.
Well, what's changed my life this week is high-waisted jeans.
Mm.
Yeah, I know it's a bit retro, but they're actually very comfortable.
Comfy, yeah.
And I've gone to a brand called Mother.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, really, really nice stretchy fabric. Not jeggings. I wouldn't be seen dead in them.
And are they
obviously.
Kind of wide leg as well?
Yeah,
to be wide leg at the bottom, don't they?
If you're a very short person, I'm 5'2", 5'5", mm-hmm. if anyone wants to know. They're really comfy. They're really cool. And they just work. And I would never have thought high-waisted jeans would ever have worked on me.
Life changer.
I know. Mm. Yeah, midlife changer. Mm. Something I've been trying this week is the two things, actually. eBay is about to launch its vintage hub, so you don't have to buy new. You can buy old. And I'm not talking about kind of collectible vintage, just generally secondhand. So that's very useful.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, you'll like this, Trish, because it involves Sprouts.
Oh, God.
As a hopeless, terrible cook, like Wendy Craig in Butterflies, that's who I am.
I love her. She's my icon.
Dreadful cook. I'm more like, what's her name?
Who?
Not Wendy, the other character.
Oh.
Oh, I can't remember. Anyway, I found
ourselves.
The BBC Good Food website.
Oh, God.
I know.
That's been there for years. It's brilliant.
I was like,
brilliant.
This is amazing. It's got loads of recipes on it. Anyway, you can use sprouts for other things instead
of Brussels sprouts?
Yes.
Of course you can.
Yeah.
Like what? What if...
Well, I made a sprout and mayonnaise salad.
Oh, delish.
Who would have put a sprout in a salad?
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
a whole new world has opened
Excellent.
Up for
well
me
done
in these
you.
Self-isolating times. And my little bit of nostalgia noodling is Jennifer Lopez in Hustler. Have you seen that?
Oh, no.
She can,
it's another
she
one
can do
for the
things
old
on a pole.
Self-isolation. Oh, poles.
Aged 50. It's just amazing. She's just amazing. It's not an old film, but what she's wearing
yes.
in this is her Jenny from the Block look. Do you remember
oh,
that?
Yes.
She's wearing these massive hoop earrings.
Oh, brilliant. See, I'm going to see you next time I see you.
Yes.
You're going to be wearing some hoop earrings.
I am.
Hoops.
I'll be Lozza from the Moors. That's where I'm from, the Cornish Moors, see?
Oh.
Lozza from the Moors.
Icon. Right. So for
Talk
me...
Talk to me about cats, Trish.
Oh, no, I'm going to tell you what changed my life first.
Okay.
Okay. So that's actually somebody, I don't know where I found it, a book by, I don't think it's a new book, but by Dr. Rangan Chatterjee, TV doctor.
His this book, is more woo-woo nonsense,
well, it's not
isn't
really.
It?
Really. It's called Stress Solutions, 4 Steps to a Calmer, Happier You. And I just thought, oh, yes, here we go. And actually, it's a really nicely written, thoughtful book that's very easy to read, divided into 4 key sections, as you can imagine, because there's 4 steps. And it's almost like everything that you know that you should know and that you should do, all sort of laid out very clearly and easily to digest. And the first thing I've been doing from it is doing a morning affirmation.
Oh, for God's sake.
I knew you'd like that.
What are you saying?
I'm not telling you that. I'm not sharing. It's very personal. But it's something what? About yourself and what you have to believe in yourself. And you have to say it over
Make
and over.
Make me Jenny from the Block.
Yes.
That's mine.
Exactly. And by the end of the day, you will be Jenny from the Block.
Well, I've got the earrings.
Yeah, there we go. You've made a start. So that's great.
Is it like asking the universe where you write it down and put it under your pillow or throw it out the window?
Well, you could do. You could try that.
That's
a thing. He doesn't recommend that. Right. So that's that.
Dressed. Do you have to be dressed for it?
I'm going to tell you the next thing because
okay.
you're going to hate this even more. What I'm trying is I'm clipping my clap.
Clipping your clap. What's this? I think I don't want to know this.
You do. I'm clipping my cat's claw. After Margot,
I'm not
from
a
the
fan
Good
of
Life.
Cats.
I know you're
as
not.
You know.
Margot's quite nice. She's but the thing she's not nice
quite
is
nice.
She claws all our blooming furniture and makes big holes.
Chop
in
her
it.
Feet off.
Well, not quite. But she, the vet showed us how to actually clip her claws with these special little claw clippers.
This sounds like a YouTube video to me.
Maybe I could do a whole new channel.
How do you do it then? Would you have to hold her down?
Somebody has to hold her, and then you just sort of press her little paw and her claws will come out, and you've got these special little blunt
clippers.
What do you
mean her claws will come out?
Well, they
just
pop
magic?
Out. They're retractable, aren't they? So they pop out. If you press her little paw.
Is she a real cat?
She is. She is, unfortunately.
Poor Margot.
Right. And then my nostalgia noodling is actually a bit of a sad one. So my son, it's his last day of school today. Unexpected, but that's the way it is, because he's going to be going to a sixth form college from September, hopefully. And every year I've done a lovely first day of school photo of him going down the path, getting older and older and spottier and bigger and taller and lovelier. Aww. And I did one today of him leaving school, because he's obviously really sad about it. He's going to be saying goodbye, a very sudden goodbye to all of his friends. So we're going to get out those sweet little photos and and add this one to that little collection.
We did the same.
Yeah.
We've got a picture of the girls outside the little infant school, which is actually opposite our house where they first went, and I made them go and stand outside this morning in their little uniforms again.
Not for them, for us. But they'll appreciate it in years to come.
They were quite embarrassed.
Of course they were.
But it's very sad. It's a very sad time. It's a little bit of loss, isn't it? It's the end of childhood, really.
Yeah, I think so. But onwards and upwards. So that brings us to the end of this episode, and actually to the end of this series of Postcards from Midlife.
Thank what you... fun we've had, Trish!
My favourite episode's been sitting here in the car with you, recording
honestly
this.
Honestly, never thought this would where we would end.
We've been
end.
Watching the trees and the birds. It's been very nice. So thank you so much for listening. We're going to be continuing the conversation on Instagram and Facebook too.
Hopefully, yes.
And please do rate and review us on your app, and listen out for when we'll be back, which should be in about 6 weeks to 2 months.
There will be another series of Postcards from Midlife.
Hurrah.
Hurrah.
Hurrah. See you next time.
Goodbye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.